Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz, coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, it's another day closer to the season opener.
It is, Mike, and that means only one thing. More content, more discussion, more topics for Mike Spofford and Weston Hodkowitz to discuss here on Packers Unscripted. But also, it really is, as we kind of I asked Dom Capers about earlier this week, the time where all these coaches, everything that they've put in for the last 6-7 months, finally gets to be unveiled. So I think in some ways it's sort of like a Christmas and opening up some presents to see exactly what you have.
Yeah, definitely exciting. And we talked a little bit yesterday about the potential matchups in the secondary with the Jaguars. They have first-round draft pick Jalen Ramsey, former Packer Devon House at cornerback. Let's flip that around and take a look at it from the other side. Two wide receivers for the Jaguars that the Packers will have to deal with, Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns. Not exactly household names around the NFL, but two guys who were awfully productive for Blake Bortles and this offense last season.
Yeah, Allen Robinson really looks like he's on the verge of becoming a pretty special player in this league. 80 receptions last year, 1,400 yards, even 14 touchdowns. And then Allen Hurns became a 1,000-yard receiver as well, very quietly. Two very similar body types, both in that 6'3", 210-pound range. The Jaguars will use them interchangeably on each side of the field. They'll even run some packages where they'll both kind of bunch up on one side as well. So this is a very deep offense. And as we saw last year with Blake Bortles, they're not afraid to throw the ball downfield. That at times is going to lead to opportunities for the secondary with him having 18 interceptions last year. But they can keep up with anybody. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of buzz around Jacksonville going into this season.
Yeah, for sure. It's a big play offense. They had a lot of big play, explosive play production last year. But as you said, that also was partly a result of Blake Bortles taking some chances. He's not afraid to throw the ball downfield, and he will throw some interceptions. And we've talked so many times in the past. We saw it as a factor last year in the playoff game in Arizona. Boy, in the secondary for the Packers, if they get their hands on the football, they've got to catch it.
Yeah, and that's been always the goal here. Sam Shields has done it exceptionally well throughout most of his career, as Joe Witt said over this, you know, these last couple times. There's been some drops there that haven't been there in the past, so he has to correct that. But all these guys they bring in and the way they coach them, when you look at Demaryius Randall now, Quentin Rollins made some plays last year. That's such a critical part to this defense, because the two main components of Dom Capers' zone blitz is pressuring the quarterback and stopping the run. If you pressure the quarterback and they can't run it, it's going to lead to more opportunities for your secondary, and then that's where they have to turn over the football. Going into this game with as high potent of an offense as the Jaguars have, that's going to be critical to being able to stop them, because at times they're going to get their yards.
Yeah, and as much attention as is on Robinson and Hurns, that wide receiver duo, it's almost made tight end Julius Thomas a forgotten man, so to speak, in Jacksonville. This was a big-time free agent acquisition last year for the Jaguars. Now, statistically, he didn't have the year last season that Jacksonville was hoping for, but this is an athletic, a talented, a big play type of tight end that the Packers are going to have to deal with, and possibly be dealing with him with a rookie in Blake Martinez in pass coverage at times.
Yeah, absolutely. 6'5", 256 pounds. They don't find a lot of guys that have his body type but can also run as well as he does. Now, there's a lot of potential there. Certainly, we haven't been able to see all of it come to light yet. Made a tremendous sort of rise up the depth charts in Denver with the Broncos.
Right.
As you mentioned, was a big high-profile free agent signing for him last year, had the injury slow him down at the beginning of the season, and then seemed like he had a hard time finding his feet from there. But when he's going and the ways that they can use him, it kind of reminds you a little bit of what I'm guessing the Packers, the capacity that they want to use Jared Cook this season, the ways in which they used JerMichael Finley in the past, a guy that can really play anywhere and also be a threat to help take away some of that coverage that could potentially leave Robinson or Hurns a one-on-one opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And we are talking about, as we mentioned yesterday, a game that the temperature could be in the low 90s, which probably sends the heat index up over 100 degrees. A lot of focus could be on the ground game, time of possession, that kind of thing, to try to keep your defense off the field, keep the defense rested. The Jaguars have a 1-2 punch at running back, much like the Packers do with Eddie Lacy and James Starks. Chris Ivory from the New York Jets, and T.J. Yeldon, a former teammate of Eddie Lacy's at Alabama, These guys are going to get their share of work on Sunday too, I would think.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk so much about the run game now in the NFL, and to me, and this is only one man's opinion, but it seems like it's making a resurgence right now. The resources that they put into bringing in Chris Ivory this offseason, really committing themselves to a 1-2 combination. And don't forget, they also have Denard Robinson there as well that's had some success for them in the past too. So that's a really versatile running game, and much like when Yeldon was paired with Lacy during what was his freshman year in 2012, that kind of is the 1-2 thunder and lightning punch that I think they're looking for now that they brought in Ivory. And for real young Packers defensive front, this will be a challenge right off the bat, not only staying in the game with all that heat, but also finding ways to stop those two guys.
Yeah, for sure. Well, lots more to talk about with this Packers-Jaguars matchup after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, continuing the discussion of this Packers-Jaguars matchup, we talked all offseason about this move to Clay Matthews back to outside linebacker, which puts the Packers back in the scheme position, you might say, that they envisioned in 2014 when Julius Peppers was brought in, to have Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers as your primary bookend pass rushers. It only lasted for half a season in 2014. Clay Matthews had to move inside, but the Packers are back to that now. And a game, as we said, on a hot day in Jacksonville, you're going to have to rotate pass rushers and keep them fresh. But this is, the unveiling, the reversion to what the Packers envisioned for their defense 2 years ago.
Absolutely. And I think when you saw Mike McCarthy and Dom Capers both talk about the construction of a championship caliber defense, or what their vision was for a truly dominant defense, that vision coincided with having Clay Matthews as an outside linebacker, because the Denver Broncos proved it last year. You have to be able to after the quarterback. Yep. And Von Miller, what they were able to do, from not only week one, but to the end of the season, how they were able to really string along that dominance for an entire season. One of the most impressive showings, I think, by defense in modern times, especially with the rule changes that have kind of favored the offense. So the Packers, not saying they're trying to replicate that, but I think they realize that they want to get Clay Matthews in his best position, and they need to do things to be able to use him in what is the most dangerous way, capacity of Dom Capers' defense, and that's outside. And curious to see how much it actually will be lining up with Julius Peppers this year. He worked a lot with Nick Perry in the preseason, but whatever the situation unfolds, they're very deep at outside linebacker, and as you mentioned, that's something I think that'll help keep them fresh, not only on Sunday, but also throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, and Dom Capers made an interesting comment to reporters earlier this week, and talking about Julius Peppers, he didn't get a lot of work in the preseason, still got a fair amount of work in practice, but Dom Capers said, "We feel good about the reps that Julius Peppers has had to get ready for the season." I think this is a thing when you talk about Nick Perry as an option, Dayton Jones as an option, maybe Jayrone Elliott, although Jayrone is not practicing this week due to an injury, but as we go along, you talk about these other options the Packers have at outside linebacker. I could really see, not to say he's going to become a pure specialist, but I could see Capers and the defense really watching the snaps that Peppers takes throughout the year, so that in the fourth quarter, in the key situations, he's out there and he's the guy that's going to get to the quarterback.
I don't think it's any coincidence whatsoever that Julius Peppers' best season with the Packers so far was last year. I mean, that even though certainly they needed him when Clay Matthews moved inside in 2014, he was more productive. He was fresh throughout the course of the season. I think they reduced his snaps, I want to say somewhere around 150 to 175 snaps last season. So they were able to do a lot more things with him late in the year. It contributed with him going to his ninth Pro Bowl, 10.5 sacks on the year. So now when you have Matthews there, when you have Peppers, really it can help one another, where it doesn't always have to be Matthews outside. They can stem him inside if they feel like that's their best package on occasion. You can use Julius Peppers in a situation where he's rushing inside on the dime and occasionally in the base and nickel. So it opens up a wide array of things. And as Capers also reiterated, even though the Packers only kept three inside linebackers, still feel like they have the necessary depth there to do what they want to do with Clay Matthews and not need him to push back inside.
Yeah. Do you see, and this is conjecture, projection, whatever, but do you see both Matthews and Peppers as double-digit sack guys in 2016?
If they're both outside the entire time, totally. Because that's the way that this defense is constructed. It's constructed to get after the quarterback. I mean, look at Blitzberg in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
You know, and what they were able to do there. And it made Kevin Green a Hall of Famer. It's just the way that things are. It's meant to develop and sustain pressure for 60 minutes. And certainly, I could see that happening. And even with a guy like Peppers, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's him or any other 35, 36-year-old pass rusher. You sometimes less is more. And I think that's something the Packers have slowly found out over the last 2 years and how they're using him.
Yeah, and how do you see Nick Perry fitting into this mix? I've always been impressed. Not that Perry can't get after the quarterback, because he certainly can. He's been productive when he's been healthy. But Nick Perry is also pretty darn good at setting the edge against the run. He is he's very much, in my view, a classic early down outside linebacker who can set that edge, but then also get after the quarterback when it gets called for. And because he's been healthy, as we've talked about all offseason, he's gotten a lot more ready, I think, for a full season than he's been able to do in the past.
For the last 2 years, I felt like Nick Perry has been their best outside linebacker in terms of setting the edge. He's natural with it, coming from a 4-3 philosophy and what his outside assignments are going to be. That's not to say that Clay Matthews couldn't, but, I mean, he's just been kind of relegated inside a lot. So I felt like when they were in their run packages, that was their best play. This year, the emphasis is trying to get him more pass-rushing opportunities, because naturally, everybody looks at the sacks. Everybody looks at the quarterback hits and tackles for losses. And when you're the kind of gritty outside linebacker that's, you know, taken down and holding the running back inside, you don't always have those opportunities. But I think that's the biggest thing this year. And with him being healthy, I think it's going to allow the Packers to be able to increase his role but still get the very best of Nick Perry.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, still more to talk about with Packers Jaguars in Week 1 after the break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, shifting gears a little bit to special teams here for the Packers heading into Week 1. An interesting situation that we have to watch and see how it develops. Hopefully, for the Packers' sake, we're not talking about it after Week 1. But Mason Crosby has to adjust to a new holder for the first time in 7 years.
Right.
He had a different holder for the first 4 years of his career, 07 John Ryan, 08 Derek Frost, 09 Jeremy Kapanos, 2010 Tim Mastay came in, and then Mastay was his holder from 2010 all the way through 2015. Now it's new punter Jake Shum. This is not an easy thing necessarily for a kicker, but in talking with Crosby this week and the story that's on Packers.com, he's taking this like a professional and says, hey, this is not a 2 or 3 week transition. This has to be ready now, and we will get it ready now.
He hasn't been working, obviously, with Jake Shum, but he has been working with Peter Mortel. A year ago, he did work with Cody Mandel. So there are experiences there of having people other than Tim Mastay holding for him. I mean, even in an emergency situation, Randall Cobb is his backup. So,
right.
And as you mentioned, it's still, you can't replicate how many reps he took with Mastay over the years, but I think he's shown that he can adapt. And that was one of the biggest concerns I know I had when we were talking about if they were going to make a punting change.
Yeah, if they were going to make that change, yeah, for sure.
Crosby has arguably, over these last 3 years, been the most consistent phase of the special teams unit, and you don't want to mess that up because, to be honest with you, as much as you need to have the field position, games are won and lost depending on Mason Crosby's foot. So that's the biggest thing. You need to make sure that he's comfortable. It seems like he's going to be able to do that okay with Jake Shum. Shum did it in Tampa last year. He was the holder when he was punting, so it's not something that's new to him. He gets it. And they were already working this week in practice with returning new long snapper, I don't know what the best way to put it is, Brett Goode. So there's some familiarity there, at least for Crosby, in being able to have at least one part of that operation the same.
Yeah, and in talking with Shum this week, he's actually been a holder going all the way back to his high school days.
He
is not a stranger to this job at all. He's done it all the way along, and I asked him, so, okay, with all the different kickers that you've worked with, is there anything, you know, strange or quirky the way Mason Crosby likes it? He says, no, actually, he says Crosby's pretty easy, just likes it, you know, tilted a certain way, and we're good to go. So Shum is more than confident that that this operation will be smoothed out and ready to go, and that's good news for the Packers.
Yeah, and also if the Packers happen to run low on running backs on Sunday, I think Jake Shum could actually jump into the backfield too. I mean, this is a pretty built kid. Yeah, that was the thing that really stood out to me when.
Yeah, you don't see punters with that type of body build very often. Not take anything away from Tim Mastey. These guys are athletes. All of them are athletes at this level. There's no question about it. But he does look like he almost should be playing another position.
Yeah, Tim was kind of built more like a wide receiver, like a lengthy receiver. Like he's built really compact, like a like a running back. But at the same time, something else you need to keep in mind going down to Jacksonville, he's not a stranger to punting in Florida either. So if it's going to be the first time for him down there, I think this is going to be a good environment for him to get his first shot with the Packers.
Yeah, and you'd think on a hot day, granted it could be humid as well, but on a hot day without the conditions concerns that punters sometimes have, a good opportunity for Jake Shum to make a good first impression.
Absolutely, and to be honest with you, that first game against Kansas City, I walked away impressed. I mean, that was the most kicks, most punts he's had in his NFL career in a game. He had 8 punts. 3 of them were down inside the 20, inside the 10, really, and should have probably been a fourth one if they could have corralled that one that bounced twice near the end zone. So
yeah, that was close.
If he was looking for a confidence boost going in, I think he got it in Kansas City. Now he just needs to make it happen in a regular season game.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, before we go to the next break, we'll take care of a little business here with one of our Packers Unscripted sponsors. At home or here in the stands, we all know that Green Bay fans give it their all, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious Chunky Chicken Broccoli Cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, we've ended each show this week throwing the spotlight on one of the undrafted rookies who made the Packers 53-man roster. So let's talk a little bit about safety, Kentrell Bryce. Now, the Packers had an undrafted player from Louisiana Tech who was here for quite a while in the defensive backfield, no less, and Tremont Williams, who fashioned quite a career for himself. We'll see if Kentrell Bryce is headed that way at safety, but what stands out to you about this young guy?
Kentrell Bryce, more than anybody else, and me personally, this is my only one man's opinion, but I know all the eyes were on Joe Callahan during preseason, and rightfully so. He was holding on to the football. He had to play a lot of snaps. But if you were watching the back end of the defense, Kentrell Bryce impressed me so much in terms of not only his awareness, tackling ability, but also his speed. And especially on some of the kickoff coverage units, you could really see it. There were a couple tackles he made. I want to say one of them was in Kansas City. I think there was also probably one of them the week before in San Francisco, where he was able to just come out from his spot across the field, cross the hashes, and be the first guy to the returner. And not only to have that speed, but also to have the control is what really stood out to me. And when the Packers made the decision to keep 6 safeties, I think it made a no-brainer that Kentrell Bryce was going to be on this roster.
Yeah, I agree with you. The speed, when you watch from the press box, our view from up above, you're seeing the whole field. His speed is really what jumps off the screen at you, because not only playing center field at safety and maybe closing on a receiver, but closing on the running back when he would break through the hole. I mean, he's up there right in position to make the tackle. You mentioned on special teams, it definitely stands out. And I could see, I don't know what the Packers and coordinator Ron Zook are going to do, but I could definitely see Kentrell Bryce being potentially on the field on special teams against the Jaguars on Sunday.
Totally. And that was the thing, too, is that when you are able to, one, you can't teach speed.
Yeah.
But when you have the technique that he's had so far, and I know Darren Perry will say there's a lot of areas where he still needs to work on. Certainly, that's true. He's an undrafted rookie. I'm not trying to put him up on, you know, the Ring of Honor or anything. But the thing is that just stands out to me about Bryce is that it really wasn't one day either. It's not like, oh, he made that play, that was cool. He should get a roster spot.
Right.
It was from the very start of training camp. And this is a guy that's played a lot of football. I mean, looking at his stats in front of us here, started 33 of 49 games at La Tech and, you know, 210 tackles, 5'11", 200 pounds. He's not as big as Marwin Evans, but he really seems to use that size to his advantage and can move well with it. And with the paramount, or I should say emphasis, that the Packers have placed on the safety position, this is one of those guys, much like Chris Banjo was 3 years ago, that you could see having an impact on this roster and understand, looking at his makeup, how it could translate to this defense.
Yeah, for sure. You always wonder with guys like this, when they stand out in training camp like they did, you wonder how they didn't get drafted.
Right.
This is also a guy who wasn't even invited to the scouting combine.
Right.
Now, there are a lot of guys that are invited to the scouting combine who don't get drafted. Bryce was not even at the combine. He had one chance to make an impression, and it was at his pro day, at the Louisiana Tech pro day. He obviously ran a blazing 40, you know, the vertical jump, all of that. The numbers were off the charts, and it caught the attention of the Packers. I don't know how many other teams necessarily were in the running for him to sign him right after the draft, but what we've seen on film in the preseason, there are probably some teams regretting that they didn't make a harder push for him.
The Packers have a lot of confidence in both Darren Perry and Joe Witt in terms of how they're able to coach guys and how they're able to teach technique. When you add in those attributes, that speed, like they did with Sam Shields, even Josh Hawkins now too is another burner that they drafted,
yep,
or I should say they got as an undrafted free agent, and you're able to bring that in and really teach the rest of it. You have a really good project to work with. Now it's just about bringing it along, and I think that's something they have confidence that Bryce can do.
Yeah, definitely. Well, he'll be a fun guy to watch here throughout his rookie season and perhaps beginning week one in Jacksonville. So that's a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.